On today's podcast, I go through a history of trying to pick the series and give you my NBA Finals pick. We're going to talk with Van Lathan just about anything, and he's got a book out, and we'll do a little life advice, and we go abroad, soccer F1 style with Cerruti. It's the Ryan Russillo podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available. And listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 and older and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply. As we all get ready for the NBA Finals, trying to figure this whole thing out, right? Trying to figure out which way I'm going to go with this, which team I'm going to pick. And I'm going to run through a couple different things. And I want to talk about the categories of confidence when you go ahead and picking stuff. Now, 20 years of doing this, I've had to pick a lot of games, some success, some failures. Some I saw coming, some I never saw coming. And that's just the way it works. That's why we keep coming back, because it's sports. One category is the masses are asses. You'll hear a lot of people say, if you go with the mob, you end up being wrong. And that's definitely happened a lot in sports. If you look at the biggest spread in Super Bowl history, that's Super Bowl III, Colts, Jets, Namath guaranteeing a victory. The Colts were favored by 18 points in that game. Everybody was picking the Colts. I don't even know if Joe Namath was really picking the Jets. And the Jets pulled one of the greatest upsets in modern day sports history. Another big Super Bowl, the eighth largest spread ever. More recent, Super Bowl 42, Pats undefeated playing the Giants in a rematch from the end of the regular season. The Giants end up winning that one. I was working at ESPN at the time, so I think I had a good sense. I don't remember anybody picking the Giants. You may have a friend from Yonkers that always saw it coming, who also summers in Newark, who is a lifelong Giants fan that never gave up hope. I'm not super interested in that guy's predictions, all right? So when that was happening and New England loses that game, the one indicator that maybe we should have had in hindsight, but it is playing the results, is that because the Giants had played them so closely at the end of the regular season, that had a lot of value if they were going to match up again in the Super Bowl. So New England, who's still that team, I would argue, is one of the great football teams of all time. You're just not allowed to do it because they ended up losing the Super Bowl and they lost as a 12.5-point favorite. Sometimes the masses are right, you know, because you can't sit there and say, wait a minute, does that mean every time there's this thing what everybody thinks is going to happen, it never happens? Well, no, it has to happen enough for us to believe in it happening again. And the Chicago Bulls are probably the best example of that, at least in my run of paying attention to sports. I mean, even Alabama's lost games. The Chicago Bulls in their six finals, by the way, they were favored in all six. They were minus 200 for the series against the Lakers, minus 250 against Portland, minus 240 against Phoenix. They were minus 950 against the Sonics for the first of their second three-peat, minus 200 against Utah, and only minus 115 against Utah in the rematch for Jordan's last ring. The Bulls were actually dogs in games 1, 2, and 6 for that series. So, like we said, there's plenty of times where the public is just wrong collectively, but there are also times too, which we don't really, you don't have a lot of people after everybody picks something to happen and then it happens. You don't have a lot of people being like, hey, credit to everyone on this one. Really good job. Everyone got this right. I don't hear those segments a lot. I have personal clarity history, as I'm sure you do, where you're just seeing things a certain way. And maybe it's a favorite, maybe it's a dog. Probably my most famous one is 7 years ago with the Warriors when they were down 2-1 against Memphis and everybody wanted, it felt like a lot of the former players, it was new, people didn't want to believe in the Warriors. They, for some reason, didn't think they played any defense because they just didn't, I don't know, want to look it up that they played well defensively. And I said, print the shirts. We printed shirts. The Warriors ended up winning a title, which, you know, some people look back and say Cleveland would have won it if they had their guys that are healthy. I'm not going to tell anybody that they were wrong about that. But Steph gets his first ring and many shirts were printed. But I cannot emphasize this enough. Being around former NBA players that we had, you know, when I said print the shirts, Chauncey Billups was in the studio with us. Because Chauncey was like, they're getting into these guys. There was just this idea that if you got physical, pick them up full court, you were going to solve this Golden State riddle. And that didn't really happen because I felt like they had figured something out in that series. Another one, because I'll just never forget, because I don't usually, I'm usually not this dismissive of an opponent, but it was college football, January 1st, New Year's Day Bowls, the whole deal. I decided to fill in for Mike and Mike that morning, just because whatever, I wasn't doing anything. I was in Connecticut and I like college football, and they were like, will you host like a college football kind of whole deal on Mike and Mike that day? I was like, yeah, no problem. So we were running through the New Year's Bowls. I think it was Brad Edwards and Trevor Manich with me, who were my game day co-host for college football for radio. And we were going over the different bowls, and I just remember the Outback Bowl. Yes, Tennessee was an 8.5-point favorite. They were number 23 in the country going up against number 13 Northwestern. And I said, if Tennessee doesn't beat Northwestern, then I literally know nothing about college football. Because I'd watched enough of the games over the course of the years. Like, I just can't fathom this Northwestern roster beating Tennessee's roster, despite the rankings. And obviously, Vegas felt the same way, and it was a bloodbath. It was 45-6. There's also personal cloudiness, right? Where you are watching all the games. You think you have it figured out, right? And then you watch it happen and you go, uh-oh, this isn't going to work out at all. A couple of my favorites, and I have plenty to pick from. The 2009 Eastern Conference Finals, Cavs, Magic, right? We're looking at a situation where LeBron is going to face off with Kobe. I remember running into Bill Simmons on ESPN's campus long time ago. And I was asking, hey, are you doing any of the World Cup stuff? He's like, what are you, nuts? It's going to be Kobe LeBron in the NBA Finals. He's like, you would want to miss that? I go, well, I wasn't invited to the World Cup. I'm not saying. And I think that was right around, I don't know, the World Cup 2009 doesn't sound right, but there was something going on where the heavy hitters from ESPN were all going somewhere. And he was like, no, there's no way I'm not going to be here for LeBron, Kobe in the finals. And that's how everyone felt about it. It was just kind of understood, hey, LeBron's going to get there. He's going to get back to the finals 2 years after he had no chance against San Antonio. It's going to be Kobe. This is going to be unbelievable. There was an ad campaign around it. It was already happening. And then you watched the Magic wing players against the lack of size in the backcourt. Was it Mo Williams, Booby Gibson? And you're like, wait, this is a bad matchup for Cleveland. This isn't going to work. Another one, when I bet a ton on the Packers against the Broncos in that first Super Bowl, I was like, oh, Packers D-line. I'm looking at average weights of the D-line against the average weight of the O-line. I'm like, they're just going to push them around. And then you watch the game, and you're like, wait, this isn't going to work. And then, of course, Kentucky, when they made their run to the final that they lost to UConn, where I was like, you can have that team. I said that on Cowherd's show because I felt like Calipari felt the same exact way about his Kentucky basketball team. They had a close game, I think, with Wisconsin there, where it would have been an earlier exit. And then they're all the way to the finals. And then I had gone on vacation and someone wrote about it in a Kentucky newspaper that I was supposedly on vacation, but I was likely just not showing up to work because I was so despondent or ducking it. I don't know. That was sort of weird. And then when I came back from vacation, there was somebody who was like, hey, how do you want to handle this? I'm like, handle what? I picked against Kentucky and they went to the tournament final. Like, it's going to happen again, man. Like, I'm going to be all right. We're going to be okay over here. So all of this leads into, and there's other categories that maybe you have as well. We could open this all up to different stuff. There's this other category that I am now facing as I try to figure out who I want to pick for the NBA Finals, where there's no clarity. There's plenty of cloudiness. I don't know if it's personal or not. We can look at some of the lines on this. Golden State's favorite in the first game, -3.5. 92% of the money is on Golden State for game one. 81% of the public bets, not public money, because there's a difference between the number of bets on a side and then also the handle. But the public bets, 81% are on Golden State, who are now -160. You can see that on FanDuel for the NBA Finals. It was even lower than that, and then it moved to 160 pretty quickly that night as Bill and I were doing the pod on Sunday. So it seems like a lot of people, even though I don't know that we're talking about this in the basketball sense, but I'm just wondering how many of you have friends that are just going, oh, it's Golden State. They're going to figure this out, because they're still having like a 2015 to 19 Golden State hangover, when we all realize, those of us that have watched it all, this Golden State team is really, really good, but it's not that team. And that's not an insult to not be that team, because that team, especially with Durant, I still think is one of the three best teams we've ever seen in NBA history, and maybe the best. But I don't know how to win that argument. So the public likes Golden State, but the analytics love the Celtics. I did the analytics rant about the Celtics when the stuff first started popping up. I thought it was overwhelming. Not just that the analytics ended up being right about the Celtics getting them to the finals, but I just never quite understood how they were such heavy favorites in comparison to other teams. I think they were twice as likely to make it than the Phoenix Suns. And it ends up playing out that way. I just didn't understand how it could be projected that way. And at one point, I think Golden State, before we were even into the playoffs, was eighth. They were behind like six or seven other teams. I was like, that seems a little dismissive, because I was looking at some of the 538 stuff, and they had like the full roster rating and then the current roster rating. And Golden State's was almost equal, when I felt like, I don't know that this is a true reflection of full health Golden State. So 538 has the Celtics. It's been floating around like 80 and 81% projected to win the NBA Finals, which I would say both the public money seems absurd and the projection of 80% seems absurd to me, because I think this is a really tough series to figure out. If we want to just look at some of the matchup parts of this, Boston size options, I feel like that's going to be a really big problem for Golden State. Because if Rob Williams is healthy in the Horford-Grant Williams thing, and hell, they could even throw Tice out there, but I don't think they'll need to, that's a lot for Golden State to worry about when they really only have Kevon Looney. That's why I was even saying, like, Bielisa might just be out there as a big body to just kind of hang out for 10 minutes a night, just to throw a body at the rim in some way. I also think Smart on Curry is probably something Marcus Smart is looking forward to, because I would say against Butler, Marcus Smart didn't exactly look like Defensive Player of the Year. But it's maybe just a bad matchup for him. And against Curry physically, even though I think this is the best driving Curry has ever done to the basket, that this might just be a little bit easier just from a physical standpoint. I would think that's a pretty safe assumption. On the other side for Golden State, Boston hasn't seen an offense like this that keeps playing the entire time. As overwhelming as Giannis is, you know what's coming. As great as Jimmy Butler was, you knew what was coming, right? These are predictable things, where with Golden State, you're never quite sure like where the attack, I shouldn't say never quite sure, but you understand they're attacking you from different angles and they play out the entire possession. It's not facing one guy with the basketball, wondering how you can build a wall against him. And then the turnover part of this. Jason Tatum throughout this run has turned it over 77 times in 18 playoff games. That's 18 more turnovers than anyone else, the number two guy. It's 18 more turnovers than the number two guy in that. I worry about Boston's late offense when teams will sell out, like Golden State will, to shut down Tatum. You would think that Golden State's watching the end of Game 7 against the Miami Heat saying, we need to do some more of this stuff, because Boston doesn't seem to have a really good counter when they come off of this. You could say maybe Smart hits a couple of those threes and it doesn't really matter, but that's another part that bakes into me trying to figure out who I like. The final part of this that I think is funny is the, has anyone played anybody? Because this is such a new group in the NBA playoffs, at least like non-resume teams collectively, where this group, there wasn't anything necessarily to buy into, and especially that's because Milwaukee without Middleton. So it felt like we were very even at the top for like six of these teams, where you could talk yourself into any of these teams maybe winning an NBA championship. But that turns into a, well, Golden State only beat Denver, and other than Jokic, they're not very good. Okay. And they beat Memphis, and Ja was missing for the second half. All right, that's fair. And then Dallas, maybe that win against Phoenix was a little fluky. It turns into a college football argument. You do the same thing with the Celtics, right? Brooklyn, sure, but they're a mess, and the Kyrie stuff, and Durant trying to do it by himself. Okay, no Middleton, covered it. Miami, I still can't believe that series went seven games. And part of game seven, maybe it's a complete over. Maybe it shouldn't matter. I don't care about the collapse, because I think you play to the score and Boston kind of stopped playing. And the next thing you know, they're about to lose the series. It's alarming. Maybe it means everything. Maybe it means nothing. I don't have the answer to that. But it's very college footballish, because we'll do it all the time in college football, depending on where you're at geographically. You know, this year, hey, Bama, whatever, they don't even deserve to be in. They haven't beaten anybody. Well, they beat Georgia. Yeah, but Georgia's not any good. Wait, Georgia's undefeated and they're not any good? No. Really? Yeah, they haven't played anybody. Yeah, but they're destroying these teams. Yeah, they haven't played anybody. So they're not any good? No. So we're like 1,000 games into this season. Has anybody played anybody? Actually, no. No. Really? No one's played anybody all season? No one's played anybody good. These teams that are going to play in the playoffs, no, they haven't played anybody. No, Notre Dame, no, none of those teams played anybody good. Has that happened before? Oh, yeah. Actually, I don't think anybody's played anybody in like 5 or 6 years. So it's fair and it's also unfair when it's really hard, okay? It's still hard to get to the NBA Finals. My pick is Golden State, and I hate it. The NBA Finals are here, and so is your chance to score big on FanDuel Sportsbook. Throughout the NBA Finals, FanDuel is giving new customers $200 in free bets, guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. Bet the money line, point spreads, player props, and so much more. Plus, you can combine your bets for an even bigger payday with same game parlay. Okay, here we go. Options for game one. As of right now, Golden State on FanDuel, -3.5. First basket, Jaylen Brown actually has the lowest payout here because the expectation that they would run it for him. Steph Curry, if you go first quarter points, the total on that one's over under 8.5 points in the first quarter. I take the under there, and there's also a series payout where if you get the series score right, depending on how many games, which side wins, if you wanted to go Golden State in 7, the payout on that one's still pretty good, kind of plus 400 area for that. So you also could do a Rob Williams block shot deal to record two or more blocks. Rob Williams minus 170, and that one, Draymond's plus 200. So there you go. A couple different options for you on the same game parlay with all the different betting options from FanDuel. Just sign up with the promo code Ryan, R-Y-E-N, if you haven't tried FanDuel. Now is the perfect time to give it a shot because the only thing sweeter than watching the finals is cashing in on all the action. Join today with promo code R-Y-E-N and turn a $5 bet into $200 in free bets, win or lose. Make every game feel like Game 7 with FanDuel Sportsbook. FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. Must be 21 and older in select states. First online real money wager of at least $5. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued with non-withdrawals. Free bets that expire 14 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-800-789-7777, or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-GAMBLER, or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, New Jersey, PA, Virginia, or 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help, Michigan, 1-877-8-HOPE New York, or text HOPE New York 467-369 New York, Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789 Tennessee, or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net West Virginia.
Continued economic responsibility demands restraint in government expenditure, and last year we achieved the largest ever recorded reduction in the budget deficit, 1.5 billion.
That's right. Real Madrid. I always forget how much I love this stuff. So, Cerruti, we're going to start there. An incredible win by Real over Liverpool. I'll start by saying I think I'm to blame for the loss. I didn't know who was playing, and I forgot how much I like this stuff as a real casual, good application of the word there. And I had ordered the Liverpool Hirachis months ago. Not because of Liverpool, because I love the old Hirachi that came out when I was a kid. That was a big deal if you could get those. And I threw them on that day to work out. And somebody was like, ah, Liverpool.
Big day.
And I was like, oh, shit. And then I was home doing draft stuff. And then I saw everybody complaining about nobody being able to get in on the Liverpool side. and there's tear gas. And I thought, oh, the game hasn't started yet. Tear gas. This is a positive for me because I forgot the game started because I wasn't really paying attention. And then there was a massive delay. I threw it on. Yeah. I watched it. It looked like Liverpool should have been up 4-0, 4-0, yep. Excuse me. And Real wins this one, 1-0 and the Champions League. So go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, of course, just to start off with the delay, I mean, it was like a 36 minute delay. Camila Cabello was mad because the fans were singing during her performance. It was just a complete shit show.
Is that who did that thing? Is that who did the pregame?
Yeah.
She got after it. That was impressive.
Yeah. I wasn't really all in on that. I was trying to figure out on Twitter, like what the hell was going on outside, but apparently there were like fake tickets that I think Liverpool fans were, you know, obviously trying to get in with not real tickets. There were a ton of them. And also people from like the local area in Paris that also wasn't apparently a great area in the city of Paris. So like you had like locals just kind of like jumping the fence, getting in. But it's just, it's classic. Like it's any soccer governing body. They just don't have anything figured out. This game was actually supposed to be in St. Petersburg, but obviously that got moved because of the Ukraine situation. So not an awesome start.
Tampa St. Pete?
Not Tampa St. Pete. Honestly, though, you could argue that Tampa St. Pete probably would have had a better lockdown in the situation. There would have been a better event overall. One of these years, we've got to get a Champions League. It'll never happen. We've got to get a Champions League final in the U.S. That would be awesome. But I'm surprised. Like, so you watched the whole game? Because it wasn't actually a great game. You're right. Liverpool should have been up by... I mean, Liverpool were the better team. I talked about this with Paul Carr on the gambling pod beforehand.
You got a new pod, by the way, right?
Yeah, what's up? Well, one off there, but we're trying to do more soccer content for you going forward. But Liverpool, in every single measure, every single statistic, you can even go like position by position. Liverpool were the better team, other than probably the midfield, because Real Madrid have a legendary midfield. But the thing about Real Madrid this year was that they beat so many unbelievable teams in such improbable ways. So you got to just go through their schedule. Obviously, they make it out of the knockout group. They lost to this team called Sheriff, which I don't even know what country they're in, but they've never even been in the Champions League before. That was the first game they had in the group stage. They lost it to this unknown team, you know, that probably should be playing in the Conference League, which is three divisions below that. So they lose that game, but then they end up making the knockout stage. They beat PSG come from behind fashion, which was kind of great because PSG had been, you know, rumored to Mbappe was supposed to go from PSG to Real Madrid, which didn't end up happening, which is kind of bullshit. We can get into that later. So they beat them. They beat Chelsea, who are the defending Champions League title winners. They beat Manchester City, who are the reigning and now current champions of England, and they were probably a favorite to win the Premier League and the Champions League again. And then they beat Liverpool, who was probably everyone's darling and who everybody thought was the best team in the world. So you could argue that Real Madrid had the most improbable and hardest run in the history of the competition, and they win their 14th Champions League title, which doubles up the second most ever. So they are the Champions League team.
What's up with that goalie? Is he really that good?
He's really good. He used to be at Chelsea. He said after the match, he was all mad because he was like, oh, I don't feel like I got the respect in England. And so he goes to Real Madrid. He's really good. I would say he's probably a top five keeper in the world. The irony here, and I'll probably get some shit for this, I actually think Liverpool's keeper is better. Like if I'm building a team, I would take Alisson from Liverpool because he does a lot more with his feet. He's not quite the shot stopper that Courtois is, but Courtois is a top five keeper in the world. He's incredible. And he plays for Belgium. And that was genuinely one of the best goalkeeping. I mean, that's up there with like Tim Howard. Do you remember 2014 World Cup against Belgium? I think Tim Howard had 16 saves in a game that the U.S. should have had no business being in, and ended up basically taking Belgium, who was, you know, one of the most talented teams in the world, down to the wire, ended up losing that game because Wando missed a sitter late in the game. But that and the Tim Howard matchup, those are the two of the best goalkeeping performances I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, Courtois, like some of the saves he was making, the one that hit the post that he got off Mane, that should have been a goal. He had two Salah saves. One of them was a tight angle that he just completely closed the gap, got his body, saved it with his leg. It was like, that's the thing too. It's not quite like hockey where, like, you know, you don't ride a hot goaltender necessarily in soccer, but I think goalkeepers in soccer are actually a little more underrated. They're getting more, like, probably more credit nowadays than they used to, but he put on basically a performance for the ages and won the player of the match. So he fully deserved it. I said he should have won like half of the title money on his save performance alone.
Right, but that wasn't going to happen. Hey, so Marcelo, what was his deal? Yeah, they're showing him a lot Marcelo at the end. He's just a revered old school guy. Is it like Jeff Green?
He's been there for, yeah, he's slightly better than Jeff Green. I mean, there was a time when Marcelo was the best left back in the world. He's just probably older now, system, right? Yeah, definitely the system. But he's Real Madrid's captain, quote unquote, but he doesn't play. So he's not capping them on the
pitch.
Yeah,
I noticed. So I was like, I don't think granted, I wasn't super locked in. I was watching the Ohio State guys for the draft. I felt like, man, this guy's getting a lot of camera time. I don't remember seeing him run around, and he didn't play.
Well, you have to understand. So they won. This is what, their fifth Champions League in the last couple of years. A lot of those guys, they've won five, which is the most of all time. And Marcelo has been there through the entire ride. So he won four of them as a starter, you know, in the last decade or so. A lot of those with Cristiano Ronaldo, with Gareth Bale, who was still on the team but wasn't playing because he just is kind of indifferent at this point in his career. Although I'm still Team Bale. I still have him, holding that hope for him. But Marcelo, he's Brazilian left back. He was probably the best at his position in the world for about a decade straight. He's just old now, man. But it was good to see him. Like, because I don't know if they announced it before the game or after the game, but this was his last game for Real Madrid. He'll probably go back to Brazil and play kind of in his home country. But it was a nice send-off for a guy that kind of was like one of the cooler Real Madrid players of the last decade.
Hey, that's awesome.
You would like him. He's flashy. He's like one of those. He's like a left back, so he's technically a defender, but he's like very offensive minded. One of the best free kick takers in the world in his heyday. But he just doesn't have the legs anymore. So those guys, like, once you kind of lose your legs in that situation, especially as a fullback, you kind of can't play, especially against Liverpool. He doesn't do a ton of defending either. So there was no way he was getting game time there, but send him off on a high.
Okay, there you go.
What's your team? Do you pick a team yet? Are you still Tottenham or no? Well, you got a bunch of Tottenham gear. I don't know if you've like picked an actual team. I feel like you need to pick a team.
Yeah, Tottenham did reach out, which is very nice. We have a connection to one of the head guys over there, and he was like, "Hey, you got to get on the Tottenham thing," and I just haven't yet. So, yeah. You know, we're efforting. Just gonna get through the NBA draft, and we'll start. We're gonna make all sorts of lifestyle changes.
I'm gonna just make a suggestion. You should be a Nottingham Forest fan. They're coming up from the Premier League first time in, like, I think, like 20 years. They've won two Champions Leagues in the past, but they kind of hit on hard times. They just got promotion on Saturday or Sunday. They're going to be a fun team to root for. I think you should be a Nottingham Forest fan. I'm calling it.
Wait,
right
they ju- they had been relegated and you want me, and they just got back. You want me to pick them?
Yeah, but they're back and they're like historically a massive club. Like, they're one of the bigger. I mean, they're
what's
one
the town
of the
like?
Clubs in England.
Any waterfront?
I can't tell you a ton about Nottingham. Not going to lie. Haven't been there before. Nottingham,
I feel like that's
Leeds,
inland based on the books.
It's definitely, I think it does seem like an inland town. I mean, there's like half of the entire Premier League is in London. So like you could just throw a stone, you pick a team in London if you want to do that. But
I like how you said stone.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think you should be an Nottingham. Plus they have sweet gear too. They have really good gear. Good solid red color.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the gear part of it. All right. So yeah, I mean, we couldn't be, it's almost dead center.
Yeah.
I'm just northeast of Birmingham.
Yep.
So all right, okay, cool, good stuff. We're gonna do a little F1. Just doesn't feel the same without Kevin, but he has the F1 ringer pod, so you know, the crossover appeal, there you go. Monaco generally can get really boring. It felt like this one was going to be boring. There was rain delays forever. It was the same exact thing, delays, and all the announcers complained the entire time. I don't know, I thought it was raining pretty hard there, and then by the way, there was also clouds coming in, so it looked like F1 just was like, hey, we're going to hold off on this whole thing. So you're thinking Leclerc going to pull it off, and then there was a bunch of pit strategy, tire strategy stuff that kind of cost Leclerc because he came in. They were doing double pits, and they were like, no, don't box, as he was pulling into pit lane. And so you were just like, all right, now he's sort of screwed. And then you kind of had this fun close to it, which is another thing I didn't realize, that there was such a delay. Instead of going, I think, the full 72 laps at Monaco, they're just like, all right, 30 minutes left, just keep going. And you had Perez in the Red Bull. You had Sainz in the Ferrari, Verstappen, Red Bull, and then Leclerc. And so that's kind of how it finished up. And after the fact, you had Verstappen's dad, Jos, I think is how you pronounce it, Joss. I'm not sure. Josh Stone, I think, here in the States, but I think over there it's Jos. Not 100% sure. And he was mad about the tire strategy and prioritizing a win for Perez, which, you know, you're supposed to kind of get. But Monaco's not really that kind of race. And with a Ferrari in between the two of them, it wasn't like Perez was just going to pull over like he did earlier in the year. So I think for Perez fans, this is a huge win. It's Monaco, the history. And he was in a situation where it wasn't like Red Bull was just going to be able to let Verstappen pass to go ahead and win this thing. But after a dicey start for Verstappen, leads the points race over Leclerc by 9, and that's with two finishes out of the points because he had DNFs. Leclerc only had that in Spain recently. So if we're looking at this strategically here, I just think it's a massive turnaround where after the first three races, it was like, oh, Ferrari's just going to win the constructors. Leclerc is going to win the world championship. And you're like, no, that's actually, it's still pretty close with a lot of work here to do. A couple side notes. Russell's been the better man for Mercedes so far over Lewis Hamilton. Lando clearly, dude, Ricciardo now is 11th in points. He's finished in the points twice out of now seven races. So that's about the depth I can give you on that one. There's not a lot there. Are you watching it yet or no?
I am not watching it, no. Okay. Maybe over the summer. I did watch one. What was the qualifier where it was at night, and was it Hamilton that didn't even place? That was a couple months ago. I did watch that one. It was pretty exciting.
Yeah, I don't, was that Saudi Arabia maybe? I feel like that one's
sound
at night.
Right. That does sound right. Yeah. It was actually a pretty sweet look.
We're not super locked in on this yet, you know, and Kevin is sort of our go-to guy and some of the tire strategy stuff, so I'm not even going to embarrass myself. Guys are going from wets, intermediates, and then hards, and then it was like, now what do we do? And there you go. All right, that's it. That's talking international sports here on Going Abroad. This episode is brought to you by Arby's, the perfect sandwich. Let me think. Buffalo chicken sandwiches done right can change your life. I've never been the same in the best way possible when I experienced my first one. Also loving to travel, I've had gyros, also known as gyros. I think if you go to Arby's and you order a gyro, they're not going to judge you. And that's what I like about them. Nice chicken, perfectly sauced, butter lettuce, good body. You know what I'm talking about. And that's what Arby's has. They have more than you may even realize. Get out there and explore. Well, now is the chance to try Arby's and find your favorite sandwich. With a wide range of options, see for yourself that Arby's sells more than roast beef. Plus, for a limited time, Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April online only. Simply join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. Order on the app or Arby's.com. This episode is supported by State Farm. So look, a little rock hit your dude's windshield on the highway. And at first you're like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's just a little mark. Nope. Now by the end of the ride, it's a big crack. And it had been a while. So I check out the State Farm app. I go, hey, this is what happened. And the funny thing is I was like, do I want to go app first or do I call? Old school guy, probably should call. It's like, let's check out the app. Not only did it take a minute to get done, they set up the glass replacement. They told me the estimate ahead of time, said, you want to go ahead with it? And I was like, now I understand. It's all in front of me, all done. I don't even have to talk to anybody. That's how efficient the insurance game has become. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, just like I did, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to somebody. The app was so good, I didn't even need to do that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. He's one of our favorite guests to have on the show. He's got a podcast with Rachel Lindsay here. And we know he's got a book out now too. Van Lathan joins us, Fat, Crazy, and Tired. It came out in April. I want to get to some of the book stuff, but I just want to start with kind of where we're at right now. Because last I heard from you, you're all over the place. You're very busy. You're promoting the book. I know you're working on other things as well. But I get a text from Van. It's just like, Ryan, what the fuck is going on? And I thought it was like just a general check-in. And it wasn't. It was, and I was doing something, I think, that day. So I wasn't super texty. Well, so I apologize. You love the SEC stuff that happened a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, my God. Come on, Ryan. You know I do. Of course I love it. I love it when the quiet thing gets said out loud, you know? Especially coming from a guy like Nick Saban, that was just popcorn material right there.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I was surprised Saban screwed up. Like, whatever you think about Saban, I was surprised he went there. But I also think it speaks to, okay, as an LSU guy, LSU is considered tier one, right? In SEC football. I don't think this is any debate whatsoever. Would you say that, I don't know if you'll admit this, but do you have a problem when Arkansas gets a really good recruit?
No. Like, yeah.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I do. And I'll tell you what it is. It's not even. I don't know why I said no. Of course I do. They don't deserve it. Pig suey out of my face. This is for the Blue Bloods. Look, I am a man. I am a man of the people. I am a bleeding heart that believes in equality across the board, except for in college football. You have-nots can't come into the club. I remember when, Robert in, how did you say his last name? Remember his name?
He played for the Cardinals.
Yeah. Remember, he was like a super stud. Forgive me, Robert. I forgot how to say your name, and I'm sorry for all the people at Ole Miss. When Hugh Freeze put together that recruiting class at Ole Miss, I was like, yo, man, send somebody down there. I want to know how they're doing this. This is not, they don't go there. They
Treadwell, come here. Right. The Tunsil, the safety.
The whole class. I'm like, no, that doesn't happen there. That happens here. Go see what they're doing over there. All right. Send someone. I want a guy with a fedora and a briefcase and a trench coat to go over to Ole Miss and figure out what's happening. You know, Blue Chips Part 2. Send Al Bundy over there. I'm definitely like that. And the thing is, in the SEC, it's getting annoying. Arkansas is really good. Ole Miss is really good. It's getting to a point to where, like, LSU has, next season, they play 9 Power 5 teams. We are the dogs, basically, by the computers. We are looking at losing to all of those teams. Now, we won't. But all of those teams have legitimate squads. So the have-nots are bullying their way into this conversation, and it bothers me.
Yeah, and I don't think Texas A&M is, you know, they're not a have-not, but they are in comparison. I don't even know how to phrase it the right way. A&M mm-hmm. isn't Alabama. So I don't know if that's where this was coming from. And the NIL has made all of these coaches crazy, mm-hmm. which is, I see some people saying like, oh, finally, now that the players have some sort of benefit. And I'll think like, do you never pay any attention to college football? Because this has all been going on. But I think, I don't know if it's a power shift as much as it's so unpredictable. And the NCAA kind of just saying, we don't really know what the rules are. You go by the state policies, make them up as you go along. And then the NCAA announcing a few weeks ago, or there was a piece that said they may go back retroactively mm-hmm. and penalize teams. So I think that it's not just about the player-coach dynamic, which I think is really popular on social media. That's part of it. But I also think the unknown and how absurd this whole thing has been implemented has driven a lot of these coaches crazy because they're control freaks.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing about A&M. I want to talk about them real quick. Okay. They're like the G-Eazy of college football. You know? They're there. And they're legitimate. But you don't ever really expect them to be the best, right? So if we're having a conversation and, you know, it's Kendrick Lamar, it's Drake, it's, you know, all of these other guys that are at the top of the heap, it's NBA Youngboy for the kids who only listen to rap on YouTube and all of that stuff. If someone was like, I think actually the hottest rapper, the best rapper is G-Eazy, everybody would be like, G-Eazy. I mean, he sells a lot of records and we know who he is. He's got some tradition, but we don't expect him to be the best. But what happens when G-Eazy threatens to become the preeminent rapper in the game? There are going to be a lot of other rappers who go, wait a second, that can't happen. All right, wait a second. We can't have G-Eazy, who is somebody who's nice. We watch his games. We dig him. Every once in a while, he gets a big time bowl. He wins it. We dig him. But if he is... If one day we're talking about G-Eazy as the guy, we got to send the guy in the cap and the fedora down there. We didn't sign up for that.
You can't call A&M a white rapper.
That's who they are.
No, you can't.
That's who they are.
No, because nobody has ever, A&M can win a title. No one has ever said that in 5 years, guys are going to be going top 5 rappers currently, including G-Eazy.
Well, here's the difference, though. There are some white rappers that have been there. Eminem has been there, right? We've seen Eminem. Right now, Jack Harlow is arguably the hottest rapper in the game. It's just that A&M can win a title. Has A&M won a title? When's the last time you remember celebrating A&M winning the title?
Well, I don't know that I would have celebrated, but it's possible. It's impossible for G-Eazy to get to the status.
I disagree. I think that it can happen. We've seen it before. Macklemore is kind of like the Oregon right? He got all the way there because of Phil Knight and a really amazing scheme. He was there for a couple years. It can happen. It's just, I don't see any reason why it should happen to A&M, except for the fact that now, the NIL situation, and this is, the NIL situation is going to make A&M a behemoth. And everybody is salty about it, including Saban. You know, he doesn't have the, I'm sure that Alabama probably has some billionaire that runs Camper World or something like that. Like, I'm sure they have a couple of billionaires, but they don't have the Texas oil money. If it can go like this, A&M is about to be the Yankees. Texas, too, is going to be nuts. Like, so I think that part of what happened, part of what's going on is, you know, and I have a lot of respect for A&M's fans. No, I'm not. Why am I going to do that? No, I don't.
You don't.
Fuck them. You have no, fuck them. I'm not like, no, I don't care at all. But I was about to go straight up politicians. I have a lot of respect for them over there. I don't care if they would never win another game ever. I hate them. But the reality is that anytime the privileged in any situation are threatened, you're going to have a death rattle. And that's what you're seeing right now in college football. You're seeing people coming to the table and saying, wait a minute, that's not how it goes. So, and with the Saban, Jimbo, Deion Sanders things, it's not like anything that Nick said wasn't true. It was true. He just got a little too personal, a little too pointed, and maybe a little too intimate with his criticisms. And now the quiet part's been said out loud.
Right. Is it racist for me to have hesitation with every new white rapper?
For you?
Yes.
Oh my God. You just got invited to the Juneteenth party. Yeah. It's definitely racist for you. I mean, I don't know if it's racist. It's racist for me, perhaps. For you, I don't know what it is. For you,
that's why I'm asking. I don't know the answer.
For you, it's peculiar. I would think that a white rapper for you would be like a black president for me that you support at all costs. You know what I mean? It's like whatever happens, it doesn't matter. You support, you know? So, but look, I know mad white boys who can rap. It's just the ones who could really, like Jack Harlow could rap. I actually respect Jack Harlow. The album wasn't that great, but he could actually rap. It's just that the white boys who can really rap never end up getting to the point, besides Eminem, that they should. The white boys who could really rap, I don't know, it turns people off for some reason. But there are a lot of white boys who can rap. Hip-hop is a universal thing. You know?
I need to stay on some version of this topic now, because whenever I watch movies, because it's something mm-hmm. you did, and I'm going to tell you what I do, and then I'm going to tell you why I do it, because it's something you did. But when I watch movies now, I'll watch things and be like, oh, that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
When you were hanging out with your buddies watching Black Panther and you were showing the guys running towards the battle.
Yeah.
That video was so fucking funny. I sent it to so many of my friends. Can you explain it for the audience better than I can? What happened and when this epiphany of a flaw in the storyline in the action scene of Black Panther?
So here's the reality. I have a friend. His name is Nick May. Nick May hates on Captain America. The whitest thing about me is that I love Captain America.
He's kind of boring, Van. That's all right.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You know what? You know, if you hate the country, just say it. How could it be boring? What's boring about him?
He's an acrobat with a shield.
Wow. This is how you talk about people who fought in World War II? I'd imagine you just going up to veterans and just kicking their canes down and watching them feebly fall over. How's it different? He's a World War II veteran. It's the same thing.
There's a different criteria to be like a superhero for me. Like, I appreciate everything you did, but you know, this is different. Like, you're in a movie.
Okay. So look, number one, he's got, at least in the movies, he's got metahuman strength. He's got a metahuman healing factor. He can do all of these things. And also, Let me be really quick.
Because you realize they had to add that stuff because he was, as a comic book character, you were like, all right, go ahead.
As a comic book character, let me tell you what Captain America's superpower is real quick, okay? Thor, who is an Asgardian god, once said that the only mortal that he would ever follow into battle is Steve Rogers. Okay? And the reason why this is true is because Captain America's actual power is his determination, his battle moxie, the fact that he, in the face of whatever odds, is not just scared, is willing to go the extra mile. His humanity, Ryan, is his superpower. His humanity, his blistering, unwavering, aggressive humanity. He's there for you. And he's a brilliant military tactician. He knows all of that stuff. Expert hand-to-hand combat fighter with a vibranium shield. He's the man. All right, so I'm talking to my friend Nick. Nick is talking about the fact that, you know, Captain America is whack or whatever. And I was like, well, Captain America has better jets than Black Panther. He's like, no, he doesn't have better jets than Black Panther. I was like, I actually have proof. And what I put on was a scene in Avengers Infinity War where we're in Wakanda. Black Panther, who I love to the depths of me. Obviously, I love Black Panther, right?
You, as you said earlier, you have to.
Have to love Black Panther. Okay? They'll kick my ass right out of the culture. Like,
how would a Black Panther on more reflection a bit overrated? How would that tweet go over for you?
Well, I've tweeted that before. But,
Oh, no.
The movie itself is talking about the character.
Oh, okay. All right.
This is a storyline about I got to keep it real. But anyway, Black Panther is the greatest. This is the greatest, right? But if you watch this scene from Avengers Infinity War, he clearly starts running first. He's in the front of the attack party because he is the king of Wakanda. And then all of a sudden in the back, you see some beard and some floppy hair. And I'm like, oh, my God. Who is the white boy? And before you know it, Cap has sucked up Black Panther. Boom, walked him straight down. Think of the great walk downs in the history of the NFL. Think about Don Beebe walking down Nate Newton. Think about what was the AJ, what do you call his, what's his name? The other boy from Ole Miss. Remember he ran the boy down? The big receiver. DJ Metcalf.
Oh, all right.
Think about DJ Metcalf walking down. That's what Cap did to him. Cap showed him.
Ben Watson, Champ Bailey.
Champ Bailey. Think about what happened. He showed him who the man is. In that situation, Steve Rogers is the man. I got to be honest with you.
Oh, okay. Well, so just straight up, that's your evidence that Steve Rogers is faster than Black Panther.
I mean, what do you mean? What else do you want? It happened
What are we gonna fair.
Do? Yeah, it's like a, what do you want? It's like a, it's, we got it right there. You know? It's a whole Usain Bolt running the last leg of the 4x100 relay.
I need to pay attention. That's the whole point, is that the reaction of your friend, the general disappointment, everybody going crazy about it. I was just dying laughing watching the breakout video, the whole thing. I want to talk about the book.
Sure.
How long did it take you to do this? Give me the inception of the idea until the completion.
How about, this is how long it took me to do the book. When I wrote the book, I was writing a book about the weight that I lost. By the time the book came out, I was fat again. That's how long it took me to write the book. Okay.
So, I'm sorry to laugh, but that's an incredible, like, are you telling the editors, like, we love the pages. You're like, okay, but I'm 290.
I'm telling them right now. I'm saying it's during the pandemic, right? And so the fact that I've gained weight again is funny. The reasons why it might not be so funny, right? I was very depressed and I got on this medication and the medication plowed weight on me. And I chose to be able to sleep and function throughout the day rather than have the sexy body that I had. And so I'm writing a book. Forget about that. That's a drag. So I'm writing a book and I'm talking to the people and I'm like, we got to pivot. And they were like, what? I was like, I'm getting portly again. And they were like, oh, wow. I'm like, yeah. So like looking at it in the past tense is not going to work. We have to make this book a little bit more holistic in terms of health, what it means to be healthy, what it means to love your body, and what it means to transform. Now, I'm going to lose weight again. After I do it this time, I'm not doing it again. I don't care how much weight I regain. But the reality of the situation is my body and my mind and my psyche, they have to be okay. Like, I have to be okay no matter what casing I'm in. And I think I learned that this past time. And the reason why I learned it was because I lost weight in 2007. Like, it was a memory.
What did you weigh before? What did you weigh when you were at your best?
When I was at my best, I was probably about 225, which is, you know, I'm 6'4", so that's a good weight for me.
No, you're a big guy.
Yeah. I'm still not back to my highest weight by any stretch of the imagination. Because
what was the highest?
370 pounds.
When were you 370?
I'd say probably like 2005, 2006.
Best Buy van?
Huh?
Best Buy van
was probably around 310. The weird space in between Best Buy van and coming to California is when my weight really shot up. Because I was at home, I was depressed, you know.
So did you get to LA at 370?
I got to LA at about 340.
I got to tell you, getting to LA at 340 shows incredible determination and fuck you to everybody approach that you have to be successful in any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But like to go, hey, I'm close to the worst I've looked. Now I'm going to LA. That actually is inspiring.
But you know what the funny thing about it is that it's another one of those weird aspects of my life. I didn't know. I was so country boy ignorant to everything. I come out here and I'm like, I'm looking around. I'm like, I don't know. These people look nice. I'm looking around. The gym is packed. You could in Baton Rouge, there are actually slow days at the gym. When you go to the gym and there's nobody there. You know, you're like, oh my God, you're playing basketball, waiting for somebody to come hoop with you. You're like, is anybody gonna come play? You're doing supersets on the machine, nobody's there. Like there's no one there. I'm in LA, I'm like, yo, every time I step in this, it's packed in this bitch. Like, I see people jogging with their dogs. I had never in life seen someone jog with a dog till I got to California. Well, no bullshit. A dog is something in a yard that is meant to kill people in Baton Rouge. Like, it doesn't matter how cute the dog. Like, he's got an eye patch. He's a war veteran. He's ready to kill you. I see people jogging with the dog. They're riding on bikes. The dog is next to them. People like to have fun and get their heart rate up. So after a while of my friends here asking me to do active stuff, it's like, man, what do you want to do Sunday? Well, what I want to do Sunday is drink 4 gallons of Minute Maid Punch and watch the Saints. That's not what we're going to do. We want to watch the game, then we're going to play softball. We're going to watch the game, and then we're going to go hike. We're going to watch the game, and then we're going to go to the beach. I'm like, oh, I'm ill-equipped for this. So I do what I always do. I become equipped. Go to the gym. Shout out to LA Fitness over here. I walk in. I was down on myself, and I'll never forget the guy at the front desk. I talk about him in my book. I can't even remember the guy's name. If you guys can't tell, I'm bad with names. But I walk in to the front, and he looks at me. He goes, you want to fix this, don't you? And I was like, yeah, man. And he was like, it's not going to happen overnight. And I was like, cool. And I was broke at this point. Didn't have very much money. In order to afford the gym membership, I had to be a Southern California resident. And my area code obviously says 225. So he fudged my actual area code to help me get the discount. And he would check on me. Like, he would come by, and I would get on that scale before I left. He'd be like, what's up? I was like, down 2 pounds. He'd be like, okay, 2. I'd be like, down 5 pounds. Okay, 2. And then one day, he got transferred to a different gym. He comes back. I didn't see him for a long time, but I'm back on the basketball court. He comes back, and I'm on the basketball court, and I'm catching lobs. Like, we're just messing around. I'm catching lobs. I'm boom, bang. Boom, and we're playing. This is after the game is over. And he's like, fam, is that you? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, how much weight have you lost? I was like, 130 pounds. And he's like, what? And he comes over and he dabs me up and the whole nine it felt great. And I changed my lifestyle. And until the pandemic, I a good weight for me is actually 240. 225 at this point. 240 is actually a really good weight for me. I looked in. I feel strong. I can perform and do all of that stuff. 240 is actually a good weight for me. And I'd never been like really above that until the pandemic. And then I was good. I stopped sleeping and the weight came. And so the book is really about all of that stuff because, you know, I don't think that I think that now I'm to a point to where I can start focusing on the aesthetic and what I look like and all of that stuff because, you know, getting older and stuff. But I don't think that I should have really beat myself up about my weight as I was burying my father, you know, as I was watching people around me die of COVID. And it was hard not to, but the book is about accepting the reasons why I am who I am, but also being gentle with myself and why more people should be gentle with themselves when it comes to your body image and what you look like and who you might want to be.
Yeah, I read the excerpts that I had, and then I had it at the bookstore, and because I wasn't ready to read it, if that makes sense, but I wanted to support you and buy it.
Yeah,
I appreciate but I noticed that it was a very, and knowing you, you know, it's not like we're best friends here, but getting to know you, I love the way you kind of ended it, where I think self-help books in a way, like just the premise, not that this is a self-help book,
sure,
but the premise is so arrogant.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, I know what to tell you to do to make yourself better. Yeah,
it's a fucking guy in a tight shirt and he's on the cover, his arms are crossed, and it's like the 8 steps. You're like, I got to just buy this book for $25 and memorize these 8 steps and now we're good to go. So anybody that would tell me that, I'd be like, well, why would I listen to you about anything? Because it's not that easy. But I liked that with everything that you're going through, and you're going through a lot, and we can touch on some of it. It's just that at the end, you're like, hey, I don't have it fixed.
Yeah.
Like, I think the chapter's what? I'm still fucked up.
Yeah. It's the name of the chapter. Yeah. Having said all that, I'm still fucked up. Like, there's no fix.
Well, wait, that sounds awful.
There's no fix.
What do you mean by that?
Ryan, how can you fix? We're living in society. Like, living in society means that there's only so much you can control. You know what I mean? Like, what you can do is try to understand what your...
So you mean the word, the definition, fix, you're looking at it like, well, fixing, so this, you feel like fix, the word, the definition is actually an impossibility. Is that what you're saying?
So it's not an impossibility. Well, number one, how about put it to you like this? To me it is, but you have to define it for yourself. Like, I had fixed my weight issue, fixed it. Like, it was done. Right? It was finished. I had fixed it. 15 years of having changed my body. The pandemic comes. Now I have to deal with all these other things. So what I'm telling you is what you can do and what everyone can do is decide what healthy is to them and make the decision to have a set of rules and parameters in their life that allow them to live as happy and peacefully and free as best they can. See, it should never be to fix it. It should always be to do your best, to do your best to be mentally healthy, to do your best to be physically healthy, to do your best, whatever you want to demand of yourself, do your best to get there. But also remember that in times when you can't, you can't. Like in times when you just need to fall apart, you gotta be able to fall apart. You just can't stay broken up. You have to get back up at some point. And you also cannot do one thing that a lot of people are doing now, which is ask for somebody else to put you back together. The reality of the situation is you can ask for help, but all the trauma that I was born with, all of the disadvantage that I was born with, and it was prodigious. At some point, it's up to me. Doesn't matter how fair that is. At some point, there's up to me. Now, what is my goal in life? My goal is to create a community that I can rely on, a community of people that change the dynamic of what my existence is and what my reality is. But fixing it is probably not the answer for me. Negotiating it is. Like, for right now, I just weighed myself this morning. I'm 295, right? I'm 42. So a good way for me now, where I feel good, why I can, because I'm, look, by the way, I'm still doing my thing out here, bro. I was cooking somebody on the basketball court this past. I was thinking to myself, God damn, you know how worse this would be if I was myself? If I was myself, I would be eating you up. But right now, this Al Horford game is working for me. But if I was myself, I'd be destroying you, child. I'm that old, bitter man at the basketball court now. You guys with your fancy layups, your weird hair. You're trying to dunk everything. I'll foul the hell out of you. I don't care. So now I got to understand the expectations of myself change. What is peaceful? What's a peaceful weight? Is it 260? 260, I look fine. 255, I look fine. 250, I look fine. I'm a big guy. So maybe getting back down to the point to where I'm all shredded up and my shoulders are bulging out and all of that. What's that for now? Like, I'm not in Vegas doing the thing anymore. I'm not at rehab, stepping my feet into that disgusting pool. Understand what life is, right? Understand what it means for you to be happy. But that's going to change. And so it can never be fixed. That's a sliding scale. Peace is, it changes with your age, right? I think that's, to be honest with you, a lesson that my father never learned. My dad was an athletic god and a very popular man with the ladies, and he held himself to that standard to the day that he died. And I think part of what happened to him was that he just rode his body till the wheels fell off. It's like, if I can't be who I was in 1976, then I don't want to be. And for me, in order to have a life that is not more meaningful than my father had a very meaningful life. I'm sitting here as a result of who he is, but a life that is a little bit, that's in it for the long haul, should I say. He was 65 when he passed away. I got to make sure that I don't try to fix myself, that I try to pace myself.
Don't you think whenever, you know, you're down and you're like, okay, this sucks. A lot of things are happening here. Not in my control. I don't, you know, everybody handles things differently, but that when you kind of get pissed enough that it inspires you, and that when you realize, wait, I'm so mad about what's going on right now that, like, look out, that it's a credit to the person. You know what I mean? It's a credit to the person that you can still have that wiring where you can think, as much despair as you might be facing, that there's still things that you want, that you have to keep reminding yourself of that, as bad as you feel.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's how we are. People just, and that's part of the book. The part of the book is like, look at all these really amazingly embarrassing things that happened to me, that had to happen to me for me to just go, fuck it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to give my life. I'm going to dedicate my life to something for 6 or 7 months that then took me 15 years of my life, changed my life for 15 years. And now I got to do it again. But still, like, look at this. Look at what can happen when you dedicate yourself to yourself, right? But not everybody's like that. You know, I have people in my family who need a little bit more help and a little bit more motivation to change aspects of their life. They need to see somebody else can do it. For me, like, during this whole depression that I'm talking about and this whole pandemic-related brain fatigue, we got up and we made a movie and we won an Academy Award. And I felt like I had to do it. So whatever had to happen for me to do it, we had to do it. We had to get it done. I still have goals and dreams. And I realized that sitting and not really achieving those things, it's not going to hurt anybody but myself. So I still got to do them. But, you know, I have a theory, and I don't think it's so much of a theory as a reality for me, is that healthy societies are based around the C students. They're not based around, we always talk about what you can do, and we don't talk as much about what it is that you do. So you can be a kid from North Carolina who gets cut from your high school basketball team, and you can go on to become the greatest player in the history of team sports.
Yeah, if you have a huge growth spurt.
If you have a huge growth spurt.
And you got cut as a sophomore, which is not unheard of.
Right, and you got to cut. Right, yeah, it's not that big of a deal, right? So, like, if you have a huge growth spurt, and then you have this maniacal, mindset that every single time in your life, you just remember everyone who ever fucked over you, ever, you know? But the reality is that's not going to happen for most people. So how do we engineer a society that keeps in mind that specific achievement, individual achievement, can't be the benchmark for driving everyone else? There have to be people who just go to work, want to have good jobs, want to catch a ball game every once now and again and come home. And how do we make that? How do we make sure those people are motivated not to achieve, but just to live? And how do they have options to do that? So sometimes I do that by saying, look, I got through all of this. What do you have to get through? Figure it out and let's go for it.
Fat, Crazy, and Tired. Tales from the Trenches of Transformation. That's Van Lathan Jr. Higher Learning with Rachel Lindsay once a week. And wait a minute. You guys doing that once or twice a week this time of year?
We do it twice a week.
That's right. My bad. Yeah, twice good. A week. And next time, if I ever do, not to say that I would, if I come up in conversation, just remember my take on Captain America. You can back me on that, all right?
Yeah, I will definitely back you on it. But the reality of the situation is that you need to change. Steve fucking Rogers. He's from Brooklyn. That's an American hero. All right? Look, let me tell you last thing before I go. Steve Rogers, Avengers Endgame. Thanos and all of the Outriders are back there. This is an alien with an Uru sword, double-bladed. He's just taken out Thor. He's just taken out Iron Man. Steve Rogers is a human being. He's not a god. He has no suit. He sees Thor and all of the Outriders. You know what he does? He straps that shield on tighter. Let's go, Ryan!
It doesn't do it for me. I read all the comic books when I was a kid. It just doesn't, you know? And I'll be straight up. Like, I think I've missed the last few movies. And, you know, if we can get one Spider-Man where Dr. fucking Weirdo isn't babysitting him for 90 minutes, you know, I would enjoy that. So I think there'll be a pivot. I think there'll be a pivot at some point. Marvel, Disney have done a great job with all of the stuff, you know, but I just need a little less predictability.
All right, man. It's great talking to you, bro.
Thanks, man.
Peace.
This episode is brought to you by Hulu Plus Live TV. Looking for a better way to watch live TV? Stream your favorite sports and shows on over 95 live channels with Hulu Plus Live TV. Get access to Hulu's entire streaming library, Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, all in one plan. Start your free trial of Hulu Plus Live TV today. Live TV plan required. Restrictions apply. Access content from each service separately. Learn more at Hulu.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease. And the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
You want details? Bye. I drive a Ferrari 355 Cabriolet. What's up? I have a ridiculous house in the South Fork. I have every toy you can possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I am liquid. So, now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required.
Okay, let's do some life advice. LifeAdviceRR@gmail.com. Also, a little cleanup. It happens to your boy every now and then. From Sunday's pod, when we were talking about all the different things that happened, Marcus Smart missing shots, I made a mistake when I talked about him rolling the ball up because before 2 minutes are up, I'd forgotten that clock does run, but not the shot clock. So it's actually a very smart thing for Marcus Smart to do. I appreciate the 50 to 100 people that reached out to me about this. We had a lot of emails on it as well. Look, that's me. I fucked it up. Again, I love when people can't blame anyone else except themselves, and then they want to be praised. I do not want to be praised. I need to be better, sharper, faster. We'll get there. But we had an email from somebody that said, hey, did you not realize what happened on this? And as I was writing stuff down, they ended up getting 6 seconds, I think, off the game clock. But then somebody else pointed out, hey, I went back and watched it, and Kyle Lowry did it, and they didn't start the clock, and it was still not to the 2 minutes remaining where they would keep the game clock off, and they didn't start the clock when Lowry did it. My guess would be maybe it was so much earlier in the game that maybe they weren't really paying attention to it. I would also argue that if your home team is down and it's the home clock operator, it wouldn't be shocking for that clock operator to not start the clock to keep
take a couple liberties.
I mean, it happens all the time, which is an unbelievable thing that you have this multi-billion dollar product and there's still guys doing stuff that's weird with the game clock, based on where he works and where he's from for an NBA game. Happens in college football all the time too, by the way.
Like it's like a high school football game. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right. Let me just like, sometimes if you really look for it, you'll see stuff. You're like, what? Now, some of it could just be straight up error, which is part of it as well. So yep, my bad on that one. But there's always a lot of, especially when I did the little bit of the Lowry rant, this happens a lot. And it proves on this one that people don't listen for the 100th fucking time. I hate when Marcus Smart flops. Like when he got that call on Bam boxing out and he sort of grabbed his arm, Smart sold the hell out of it. Nobody else would ever fall down in that situation. I don't like when that stuff happens. I don't like when there's something at the rim and guys are boxing out. And next thing you know, it looks like Smart shot out of a cannon into the stanchion. And you're like, wait, how did that even physically, like where were the physics behind that movement? And then you rewind it and realize he just ran through dudes and jumped. I hate that. I don't like when Chris Paul does the stuff that he does when he gets run over by somebody tailgating. All right. I don't think it should ever be called. I think you should just let big guys run these guards over because they're initiating all the contact. So whenever I do a Lowry rant, people will say, well, how come you never say anything about those other guys? I always say stuff about those other guys. That's how great I actually am. I will have my favorite players and I will still point to things that I don't like about them. The problem with Lowry is this is basically like 75% of his game now. And I don't think it's debatable. I think he's far worse with it. I think it's gross. I've said it 100 times, and that is the difference. It almost feels like sometimes with this stuff, there's a demand for a press conference. We could do these press conferences if we want. Just have breakout videos where we just have mock press conferences for something that seems to need to be addressed. But I felt it was worth it because I said what I said on Sunday, because I can't understand how no one understands how different it is with Lowry than anybody else. That is my position. That is final. It is unwavering. And there you go. I don't know if there's do we need to add anything to that?
No, I mean, I think you're right. The Lowry thing, I saw a lot of people saying, like, if he can't even get a bucket, honestly, he can't get by anybody on his own. So why are you even giving him that call ever? You know, like at least Smart, you know, I think Smart stuff is egregious too, but like at least he can do some stuff and he can get past you and make some moves. Lowry has no lift, no jump, no like acceleration anymore whatsoever. Every call he gets, it's like basically a bailout call at this point. I mean, the one day where he just ran into Marcus Smart, was it? It was insane. He wasn't going anywhere. He just dribbled right into him. And then it was like, oh, foul, cool. 2 free throws, they're in the bonus. That's just not how the game should be played. I'm sorry. Like, this is an anti-Lowry thing. I don't like dislike him personally or anything, but it's just not fun to watch. It's dumb. And I don't understand why these refs keep getting, you know, conned into making these calls. Like, it doesn't seem like it would be hard for the league to be like, hey, Lowry's a flopper. Stop calling stuff. He'll stop doing it. Done.
Yeah, the end of the first half Lowry play, as it was coming up, I was like, he's going to dribble right into a guy and fall down. Like, at home, on the couch, I go, I already know what's going to happen on this one. He's going to dribble into somebody's hip. It's the Derek Fisher thing. When Derek Fisher could not finish on anything in transition at the end of his career, he would just go into somebody's hip and fall down. And he got the call all the time. And I'd just be like, how can a ref let that happen to him and then be like, I can't wait to give him that call again next Tuesday in Seattle.
You earned that one.
Yeah. He's going to do this. And he's like, hey, you know who burned me 4 fucking times tonight was Derek Fisher. I can't wait to give him that call for another 3 years. So I would always ask anybody this. Like, if you're defending it, if it happened to you, if Lowry was on another team and it happened to you, you'd be like, petty player. Love it. Love how smart he is. Love that he gets. So, you know, there's certain things that happen in sports where you can say, well, hey, it's just part of the game. I'm like, yeah, but what if it sucks to watch? and then the league decides we have to do something different about this. I don't know what they would change about that one. I just think it should be a pride thing with the refs where they have to go, you know what? I'm not going to let this happen anymore. And it's only going to get worse as he gets older. He can still come off a screen to his left and burn you on a three wide open. He can still do that. I will give him that. All right. I can only talk
games.
I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
All right. A couple emails here. Kyle, what's going on? It's been a while since we said hello to you. So I just wanted to check.
Yeah, I thought you guys were ruining life advice, but it was only 6 minutes. So we're good. Let's keep going.
It was only 6 minutes? Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, there's a lot of people.
It's called integrity, dude. You got to own up to some stuff. You know, it is what it is.
Right. Like I showed integrity in the first part of that, and I pointed out the lack of integrity for Lowry in the second half. So this is a double win.
Yep. It's the pause about accountability. That's all we could say.
Okay. Longtime listener of the day's SVP show before Ryan's name was added, and he'd be solo 40% of the time.
So not only does he get the naming situation, but he also gets the angst of Ryan being mad about his name not being on the show. This guy gets it.
Yeah. I was like, well, how's the show going to work? They're like, well, we'll give it three months and then we'll revisit it, or 4 years. So he's an American who's now living in Sweden. Love nice. That move. I could see myself living in Sweden for a year, see how it goes. A question to ask. 2 weeks ago, I booked a 9:30 appointment at a barbershop. I go to the shop for two reasons. You can book online. It takes me 10 minutes to walk from my house. All right. Seems pretty convenient. People love to walk in Sweden, by the way. So it fits right in. I was actually early to the shop at 9:15, and I only see one barber cutting one guy's hair. After I sit down, the barber tells me there's another guy that has come in for me. I say, okay, but I have a 9:30 appointment. Barber says nothing. He goes back to cutting the guy's hair. After 15 minutes, the first guy's done. Then the barber sees to tell me the other guy waiting had a 9 o'clock appointment. They had double booked. To give a little backstory, the barbershop lies to people all the time. What are these guys, pilots?
Oh.
We had a lot of pilots check in, by the way. And the pilots, let's share this on the pilot's behalf. That was just a joke, but it's inaccurate. We had numerous pilots check in sharing their own frustration of how bad the communication is to them. So a lot of times they're flying just as blind as we are. But a couple of pilots did agree with the idea that you should just tell the truth. Some others got mad about the whole thing. So, all right, off the pilot,
mixed
back
bag.
To the barber.
Mixed bag of pilots.
Well said, Kyle. Well said. All right, so this is a lying barbershop. He says it's a 10-minute wait when someone with a beard had just sat down. FYI, it takes me 40 minutes to cut my hair and beard normally. 40 minutes. This is like a salon.
What?
I was a little tired of this barbershop taking advantage of the customer, so I kind of blew a fuse. Uh-oh. I told the barber, why didn't you tell me the guy waiting had a 9 and I would have to wait? And I said to him, he did the exact same thing last time. The barber just looked away and denied doing anything wrong. So I stood up and told the barber to look me in the eyes because he wouldn't make eye contact.
Jesus, pal. This is 9 in the morning. We're looking each other in the eyes. Great.
Sweden?
Way to be the ugly American, dude. Come on.
What is this? Liam Neeson at the barbershop? Look at me. I know your hair's got hair. But you lied. You lied to me. Look at me. That's too early in the movie. I don't think the final scene could be at a barbershop where the guy's lying to people about wait times.
No. Not in the morning.
So the barber just looked away, said, look at me. And then the barber's only comeback was saying, what do you think? I'm Superman?
Okay.
You like that one, Kyle?
I did. I'm just picturing that accent, too. Bewildered look on his face. Yeah.
How would you say that with a Swedish accent? I don't even know. I'm not going to try.
I can't even do a Swedish accent.
Anyone want to try take a swing at that? Anybody got a little Swedish dialect they've been working on?
Can you get in trouble for that these days? I don't know.
That would be fucking amazing. American Pod makes fun of Swedish people.
Yeah.
No, or The Atlantic. A problematic podcast about people from Sweden. We need to talk. Why are after the Oscars? Why are jokes always about Swedish barbers? All right. I told him no. He just needs to not always overbook so people can actually plan stuff out. And I told him his partner is a great and nice barber, and he is a jerk. Needless to say, I left. and I'm probably banned, nor would I go back trusting someone with a knife when trimming my beard. Who was the jerk? Maybe he was a jerk too. Have any of you ever demanded other than a significant other to look you in the eyes? I don't know that a lot of guys are running around town telling other people to look them in the eyes during a confrontation. Can I say that I've never done it? I've probably done it.
Be hard to pull that up in the archives.
Yeah, I don't know that I remember. Yeah, I know. Actually, I do know. But whatever. This is pretty aggressive, man. You're not wrong, but you're also kind of wrong. Kyle?
Yeah, no, the reason I'm with my barber now is because the other barber that I first met used to do this. And I just was like, I told him once, I was like, hey, listen, I'm not a barbershop all day guy. I get the appeal, but I mean, it can't be an hour every time. It can't. And then so I just stopped going to him and started going to his buddy. And we're all friends now. He doesn't get my business anymore. Shout out to Fern Studios. Thanks for picking up the slack, buddy.
So Rudy, how long does it take to cut your hair? A couple hours?
I haven't got my hair cut in months, so zero at this point. No, I don't do anything. I mean, I used to get like the edge up and it was kind of annoying, and I used to like grow it out and then I'd cut it really short and the barber would be like, you again, great. So we're doing something different again for like the 100th time this year. Cool. But I've been going with the same guy for a long time. So he's like, he kind of gets the deal. I get it. Like the guy shouldn't be overbooking, but also you knew that this guy did this shit. So it's kind of on you for going back there and like, yeah, it burned you this time. I wouldn't tell the guy to look me in the eyes. I would just be like, you're done. We're like, you're not getting my business anymore. I go Kyle and I go somewhere else. Find a new barber.
Yeah, find a new barber. I mean, you already knew it was over. You were going scorched earth with this guy. And if it made you feel better to tell him how you felt and you knew you were moving on, then okay, fine. But it's done. Like, don't think about it anymore. It's over. There's going to be no relationship. He's not going to care. You know, he doesn't give a shit. You're going to be the crazy guy from America that told him to look him in the eyes because his appointment was running really late. And that's okay.
Is there any concern, though? Like, so he's obviously, you know, he's in Sweden. Barbers talk, I would imagine. You know, they probably have conventions and stuff, whatever.
Maybe they're
friends. You're the American. Be like, hey, like. Keep a lookout for this guy and like give him a shitty haircut. And I'm just saying, word spreads fast, and it's not hard to tell an American in Sweden, especially if you've been a dick and tell people looking you in the eyes.
Yeah, take it for the dudes. How about take it for the Americans this time? You know, maybe just don't blow up. I think the most you could have done has been like when he's like, I booked another one at 9 or I'm double booked. I think I just would have said, don't bother. I would have walked out. He never would have seen me again. That because his day is already still full. You actually are doing him a favor by not getting your haircut. So he's like, fine, cool, whatever. I'm still making. He makes as much money as he could work in a day. So his day is already full. There really wasn't going to be anything you could do other than maybe that weird thing that he'll remember that you told him to look you in the eyes. But I think I would have given him like just a one liner on the way out.
The real dick move you could pull would have been like the long-term play where you just kind of let this one slide for now. You're not happy, but you keep making appointments that you don't show up to in the future. So you're kind of fucking him over. And you know what I mean? Like you're getting your haircut at a different guy's spot, but you keep making haircut as long as you don't have to put any money down. That could have been the long-term play. But like now that if he sees you on the appointment log, he's going to probably know what's up.
You could have a new name, right? Use a WhatsApp number, maybe Google Voice.
Yeah, Swedish name. Is there a Swedish derivative of your American name?
Yeah. Bajork.
What did you say the other day? Did you say Bajork?
Yeah, I like to say her name wrong on purpose. She's from Iceland, though.
I don't know.
It is now 9:45.
I don't know. I think any good booking app worth the salt would not let you book a time without putting some money down.
So, we don't want an international incident here.
I don't put any money down for my booking guy.
Oh, okay. Put any money down. All right.
Yeah. Well, he's got his own website. I wouldn't do that to my guy, but
I think we got it covered. I think we got it. I don't know there's much more to add. Okay, let's get to another one here. Friend in an open relationship. 26-year-old male, 5'7", 165. I know I'm not huge. Okay. 10 reps at 225. That's pretty awesome, dude. At 165, I almost don't think that's true. But if you're putting up that kind of weight at 165, that's really impressive. 5K at 7-minute pace. All right. Sounds like you're fucking awesome. Likes to have some banquet beers on the weekend. All right, he's changed all the names. This past weekend, an old friend of mine got married, which meant all of my high school friends are back in town. Most of the core guys of my high school friends have remained close through college, and we've all gone on to become relatively productive members of society. My wife and I got married back in December. I had about 6 of the core guys at my wedding, and all their significant others attended. Everyone got along just fine. Fast forward to last weekend, myself, 2 buddies, we'll call them Greg and Dave. Sound like good guys. are having a great time at the reception. We go to bar with everyone after the reception ends. Greg, who was in the wedding party, suggests we go to a casino around 2 a.m. Dave and I agree. Love this. I love being in your 20s and being like, all right, now what do we do at 2
a.m.? All these good ideas.
Yeah. Yep. They're just flowing.
What do you want to do after the casino? All right. Greg's longtime girlfriend, Alice, what time's your flight? 7. I'm not going to sleep. Okay, cool. You're not going to be ruined for a week? No. Probably work out, bench, or do a 5K. All right. So Greg's longtime girlfriend, Alice, who he lives with, and my wife both say they're going to go home, but that we should go. We're great wives. So we hop in an Uber and head to the casino. Literally, as soon as Greg gets in the car, he starts feverishly texting and sending Snapchats of himself in the tux from the wedding. When we get to the casino, Dave and I agree this is weird, but don't think too much into it as we're having fun and we're all had a fair amount to drink. After playing blackjack for about an hour, I leave the table to play roulette with Dave, who then reveals to me that he was in the bathroom and Greg had told him that Alice and he were in or are in an open relationship now and had been texting a girl. He'd been texting a girl who he knew around the area about hooking up later. We were both shocked by this news because they've been together about 5 years, lived together, and generally seem happy together. Later, we go to Uber home, and right as the car pulls up, Greg, who had been planning to stay with me, since I live so close to the casino, this guy lives next to a casino.
Ugh, what a life.
And his car was parked at my house. He quickly tells us he isn't coming with us, and another car picks him up. Dave then said that Greg told him it was the girl he was texting with earlier in the night. I'm not passing any judgment on their lifestyle choices, if that's what they choose to do. But what makes me want some advice from all of you is that Greg has a bit of a sketchy past with fidelity in relationships. Dave and I genuinely like Alice and consider her a friend. So if Greg wasn't being honest about them really being in an open relationship, was just telling us that he could go fool around once she had left, then I feel guilty not saying anything to her. Then again, if they are in an open relationship and Alice is cool with it, then none of it is my business, whatever they do. So here's my question. What do I do and how do I handle it? Do I ask Greg about he and Alice being in an open relationship when he's sober? Do I leave the whole thing alone? I'm open to any and all advice here. All right. Look, what would I do? Nothing. Just off the top. All right. I would do nothing about any of this. I could be super close with everybody. Nothing would happen with your boy on this one. You don't seem to be wired that way. You seem to want to address and talk about this thing. I think of all the options that you've brought up, asking your buddy the next time you're just hanging, hey, are you actually in an open relationship? Is your instincts on that one, if you're going to do this, which I still think is a waste of time. If you're going to do this, that's probably the right way to do it. But what's your goal? What's your goal here? Do you like the wife better than your buddy? Does it bother you that he's a cheater? You know? I mean, I can see being offended by somebody who's being unfaithful to somebody else that you care about. I totally get it. I totally get it. But what really is your role in that equation? You know, unless you're much closer with the woman here and you feel like you have to like make sure this is all in the up and up, because you can't ask her, all right? Hey, just check it in. Was out with Greg the other night. Said he's in an open relationship, left in an Uber, never stayed in my house. Just double checking. Is that status? Is that where we're at with you guys? And so that's not going to happen. I just want to know why you can't. Now, some might be listening to this being like, well, he cares because he cares and he's a good person. And if his friend is doing something wrong, he wants to know that. Okay, let's apply those rules to the whole thing. Is Greg going to tell you the truth? And if you're telling me, like, again, Greg, imagine. Because that's where some guys will get away with this stuff for a little while, is they'll tell everybody they're in an open relationship. And then it's like, oh, guess who wasn't in an open relationship? That guy. So if this dude is so wired to cheat that he's also lying to you guys and you're offended by it, I guess I can see it. But I guess as I get older, I've just been like, all right, if that's what Greg wants to do, all right, you know. If this is what Alice has agreed to, cool. That's their world. Let them live in it. But it seems like you want to get to the truth of it. So what if Greg says, hey, actually, I lied and whatever. We're not in an open relationship. Are you going to tell on him? And it depends on who you care more about in the entire relationship. And even then, you know, sometimes a lot of this stuff isn't for us. I can understand if it's like lifelong friends. I can understand certainly if it's a sibling or something like that, or if you have a history with the wife, or, you know, like I think there have been times where I would go, uh-oh, but I don't know. I just think you're injecting yourself into something that's probably going to end up being a way bigger pain in the ass for you than getting some result that's chivalrous. Maybe you're right on this. Maybe you're the right guy to want to pursue it. I just find it to be probably a waste of time.
Yeah, I think the simple answer is to do nothing, because you zoom out and it's like, it seems like kind of binary. It's like, well, if he lied, she needs to know, and everybody should be like, well, you did the right thing. But then it starts creeping into like your other friends find out maybe you're a rat about that, which maybe means you're a rat about other things, or maybe your other friends are doing that too. And then it's like, you think he's going to be like, oh, you're right, you got me, I really shouldn't have been doing that. If this all falls down and you're like Sherlock Holmes and you come and you figured it out, you had a hunch and like, yeah, that relationship's over, but now maybe your relationship with your friend is over, and then maybe your other friends feel like it's just not like, it's not good and evil, it's not binary. It's like, that's why the answer is to do nothing. So I hope you can fall asleep at night knowing you've done nothing, because I think that's what you should do. That's all I have.
Yeah, like if you get to the bottom of this and you end up exposing this to the wife, then you have no friend, and she's not going to be your friend either, most likely. So you're out two friends essentially there. There's no win there for you whatsoever. The only thing is, like, it is, you know, I think it is fair to ask the guy, your friend, and just say, hey, man,
are you lying
like
to
you
me?
Said this, what's going on? What's going on? Like, I'm not trying to, I you know, come at it from the point of like, I care about you and your relationship. I don't want to see you fuck this up. Like, I just want to make sure you're good. This is true. Obviously, I'm not going to tell her, but like, I just want to make sure you're on the straight. Cause doesn't it, the way he's talking about this in email, it seems like it's surprising to him. Like, he wouldn't have an open relationship with somebody. I guess any open relationship for someone who isn't an open relationship is pretty surprising, and everyone thinks it's probably like, holy shit, that's an open relationship. But I think it's totally fair to talk to your friend, but that's the only person you could talk to about this. I wouldn't bring it up to anybody else. And even if he says, like, actually, no, I'm not, this isn't some, like, gift for you then to go tell her and make things right. Like, you just kind of have to be like, you really have to own it from your friend's perspective, and that's it. And if he doesn't want to listen to you, then that's his life, man. You got to let him live his life.
Yeah, you don't even have to say it's because, like, you want to, you know, I just want your relationship to be okay. You should be like, hey, motherfucker, are you lying to me? Like, don't lie to me
that
about
too.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it could just be that. Yeah. It could be that you can make it not even seem that deep. So he's like, be like, what's this guy worried about? He should be like, but hey, pal, don't lie to me. I feel like you're lying. I'll ask you one more time. Look me in the eyes at 9 a.m. and tell me that
look
you're
me in the eyes. Honest. Look at me.
Like, look call me. Back.
Yeah. You said that you were in an open relationship at the casino. You told Dave. My information with Dave does not. All right, I gotta stop doing that. Here's what I would also ask: are you mad that he may have lied to you or his wife? Because if you're mad, more upset that he lied to you or you don't know the truth, who gives a shit? And to make sure everything's covered here, if the emailer is much closer with the wife and feels like he has to get to the bottom of it, that's when you go, okay, all right, I understand where this, it's going to be a mess, but I can understand where you're coming from because of your relationship with all that. The way this is presented, it seems like he was friends with the guy and is closer with the guy than he was with the wife. Maybe we're missing all of this. And the emailer's going, how do I ask Greg about asking your wife about being in an open relationship?
Whoa.
He would have led with that.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that's what he was doing. I don't. Yeah. There's no more email here.
Well, maybe
so.
That's why all the names are changed, pal. I don't know.
All right. That's the podcast. Thanks to everyone. And Sketchy Greg, too. Please subscribe to the Ryan Russillo podcast. Thanks to Kyle and Steve. We will be back on Thursday. Spotify Ringer. Talk to you then.